Okay. So, friends, there is only my 60 minutes between you and the drinks now. We're running 5 minutes late, and you can understand that I'm embarrassed and concerned because I'm a Swede and we always start exactly when you're supposed to start. So I'm totally off the track now. I would like to use the coming 55-ish or so minutes to take you through a little presentation on my view of sustainability. And sustainability is a word that we've been using quite frequently during those 1.5 day and probably will, not only in the coming day, but also in the coming years and decades. Who am I then? Just need to get my slides going, because I remember. My name is J.P. Bergqvist. I have a long history in the hospitality business, Scandic, Hilton. And since a year back, I'm running a company called Sleep Well with the idea that a good conscience is your best pillow or a soft pillow. And I'm working as an advisor in practical, profitable, sustainable business. 6 years of my career, from 2003 to 2009-ish, I worked for Hilton. When Hilton owned Scandic. Scandic is a North European hotel chain, and I will come back to that in a sec. I got the role of Director of Environmental Sustainability for Hilton International. So as a Swede, I was supposed to go out there in the world and talk about sustainability. And you know, I don't know how many Swedes you know, but Swedes are extremely humble, but we know that we are best. So we're kind of looking over the shoulder and wondering, especially when it comes to social sustainability, environmental sustainability, societal setup, we're wondering when will the rest of the world catch up. So I've always used this slide when I've been out there, and it's actually said to be a true story. This was the Swedish foreign aid agency, SIDA, who got the task to distribute medicine to sick children in an African country. Now, not only the children, but also the parents were illiterate. So they had to produce this pictogram explaining that sad and sick child takes pill and becomes healthy and happy child. What they didn't think of was that this was a Muslim country where you read from right to left. And I've been using that as a humble reminder of that sustainability is not something only for us in the western part of the world or for them in the southern part of the world, but it's something that we all need to address, but maybe in a little bit different way depending on in which culture and in which part of the world we are. I would like to try to cover a few of those areas during this presentation. The challenges, of course, and I think we all know them. We've seen all the challenges in media every day, every second, but I still want to mention a few of them. And sustainability, what is it really? As I said, we're using the word, but what does it mean? What does it mean to me, and what does it mean to you? The strength of having a clear framework to explain what sustainability is about. A few words around eco-labeling and standards, and standard has already been mentioned if you attended Guy Bigwood's and his friend's presentation here earlier today. And then I will end up by giving you two business cases, Scandic and Six Senses, very different companies, as you know. So, what are the challenges then? Well, I think first of all it's important to realize that the problem is not where we are today. The problem is not the amount of fossil carbon dioxide we are pumping out in the atmosphere. The problem is not the amount of persistent chemicals that we are spreading throughout the world. The problem is not the amount of rainforest that we are cutting down every day. The problem is that this is increasing systematically. It's a built-in error in the society. That's a bit scary. Okay, so a few examples. I think we've all seen those hockey sticks curves now, whether you've been on conferences or reading in the newspapers, and whether we look at a 1,000-year period, like on this one, or on this chart, a 400,000-year period, something is happening. Something has happened during industrialization. So during the last 200 years, fossil carbon dioxide emissions are going up the roof. And I think today 98% or something of the scientists agree on this. There are a few, like Lomborg in Denmark and a few others, saying that maybe this is not the truth. And a friend of mine doing presentation on this subject got the question the other day when someone said, hey, but what if it isn't true? What if climate change is not caused by man? If we make a lot of decisions based on wrong facts, and my friend said, yeah, you're right, what if? What will happen? Well, we will save on energy, still. We will save money, still. We will start to use energy that is clean rather than polluting. So the worst thing that could happen is a lot of good things, even though all those facts would not be true, which they are. So, I promise you, no more hockey stick curves, but a spider diagram. And why do I want to share this with you? You can't even read it from distance. But this shows that people in general, including myself, we are very much a one-topic creature. We'll have to have one problem that we can address, fix, and tick off. And that has been climate change for the last 2-3 years. Which is good, because it has brought our attention to the huge challenge we are facing. But the problem is, whilst all the politicians, all the corporate leaders, all people in the world have started to try to fix the climate and fix the fossil carbon dioxide emissions, we've continued increasingly to spread persistent chemicals, destroy biodiversity, and all those other challenges. And this diagram made by the Stockholm Environmental Institute, this shows the border, what nature and society can cope with. This is where we surpass the border, and this is the trend in all those different sections. So we can look at this one, which is a positive one, ozone depletion. It shows that we can actually make it if we agree to do so. You remember the discussion around the ozone and all the legislation that came in place actually globally like 10, 15, 20 years ago. Okay, a few examples of the challenges. And it's important to remember that all those challenges can be turned into possibilities for companies, organizations, individuals that want to be part of the solution. So don't get too depressed, right? Chemicals. The problem with chemicals is that there are too many persistent chemicals that nature can cope with. And this is what we call the toxic stew. This picture shows the chemicals that you can find in mother's breast milk in Europe today. All of us in this room have around 200, maybe up to 500 different chemicals in our bodies. Not all of them dangerous, but some. There are 100,000 listed chemicals in the EU. There are 5,000 of those we know the effects of. But what we know is that the persistent chemicals are dangerous, and I will come back to that. Waste is another area. This is a rather bad picture, actually from a Swedish tourism fair, which I think in a way explains it all. The care for nature and climate, and in this case, in Sweden, really, really bad waste fractioning. Whilst in Malaga, it looks like this. Waste and waste sorting is important. And when it comes to waste, as we all know, we need to address it both upstream and downstream. Minimize the waste coming in to our operations and sort it in an intelligent way so that it's being recycled afterwards. And it is different in different parts, and this is only Europe. And you can see the red bars showing where it's going to landfill. So we have some steps to go still. Food, an area close to our heart in this business. And there are a lot of prejudices when it comes to food. And food is maybe, perhaps it is our biggest challenge. And we see so many statements that there aren't enough food in the world today. Definitely there is. Actually, the food production is twice the global need. Now, the thing is that we, in the western or, if you wish, northern part of the world, we throw away 30% of the food we produce. And there are 1 billion people lacking enough food each day. That's scary. And you can continue with those rather scary facts, which also can easily be turned into possibilities in the food area as well as other areas, like water. We know that it's a scarce resource across the world, and it's a huge problem for so many people, and actually 10 to 25 million people die from water-related diseases. And there are many together with me that expect water to may become the next climate crisis, the next subject for wars. And the focus area the last 4 or 5 years has been virtual water. Kind of just start to understand that we need 10,000 liters of fresh water to make a pair of jeans, 400,000 liters to make a car. And also here in Europe, where we normally do not see water as the biggest challenge, there are a lot of different challenges. I won't go into details, but the color shows different challenges within the area of water management. As if this wasn't all, we also have the problem with inequality. The fact that 80% of the world's population have 20% of the resources, and we, 20% of the world's population, uses 80% of the resources. And this is not fair. And even if you're a cynic and say, well, life isn't fair, you need to address this. Because in a world with intense information, it becomes very obvious to those 80% how we, the 20%, are living. And they won't accept that in the future, and we will see even more war and terror. And even worse, the poorest 20% only have 2% of the income. This is definitely not sustainable. So the question is, sustainable development, is it a shift of paradigm that we see now? And I certainly believe so. Or is it a fashion? Is it a fad? Is it a trend? Well, let's hope that it isn't a trend. You know the problem with statistics and trends? Well, you might have seen these statistics before, but it's actually true. In 1977, there were 150 Elvis impersonators in the States. In 2005, there were 85,000. So if we just extrapolate that trend, a third of the world's population will be Elvis impersonators in 2020. So let's hope it's not a trend and we just not stick to statistics, okay? Now, sustainability, what is it? And in this business, if you like, there are a lot of buzzwords. And I guess you've seen all those and more of them. And I think we, during those days, will use quite a few of them. And for me personally, sustainability has become the umbrella word that might be the best, if you wish. Hållbarhet in Swedish, bärdyktighet in French. I actually checked up all the European translations, but let's stick to the sustainability word, the English word. So my question to you, in just 1 minute, either you think or you discuss with your neighbor, do you personally or your organization have a robust definition and understanding of sustainability? 1 minute from now, please. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for this lively discussion. Now, the idea was to do a fast poll through this. However, just having one question and do the technical setup and changing, well, it doesn't pay off. So I promised the SpotMe guys that you can use it just by raising it when you answer this question. So please, hand up if you do have a robust definition of sustainability, you personally or your organization. Don't be embarrassed. This is just an audio recording, so nobody can ever track what your answers here. But in general, I think this is the truth. There aren't too many people, organizations, individuals that do have a robust definition of sustainability. So what I would like to do in the coming 15 minutes or so is to give one possible way to define this. And I think it's important, whichever word you are using, to remember that this is what we are talking about. We only have one planet, and we all know that. And we all, I think, agree that it isn't too smart to use all our resources. I think it's 22nd September last year, which was they call World Resource Day or something, and after that we live on borrowed resources. I don't know when that will happen this year, but it's probably 3 months that we actually live on borrowed resources. So we only have one planet to take care of. So my approach to sustainability, which I'd love to share with you, is actually possible to to explain in three bullet points. One is, of course, the Brundtland definition. And you've seen it and you've read it. And I think we all agree that it's kind of fair to leave this planet in the same or maybe even a little bit better shape than we got it from our parents. But does that guide us? No, it's a good philosophical way to say it. Secondly, it's important, of course, to focus on your organization's big impacts. But it's almost equally important to focus on what you yourself do, to walk the talk within your organizations, all those small details, because that sends strong signals to your organization that it actually all hangs together and you understand what sustainability is. And the third part, and that is where we come to the important strength of having a framework of understanding of sustainability. And I personally, like a lot of companies and communities all over the world, like the four system conditions of the natural step. The Whistler, where the Olympic Games just happened, is a typical example of that. For the last 20 years, they've been focusing on sustainability following the four system conditions. And a lot of companies like IKEA, Electrolux, Interface, Matsushita, well, there's a long list. And it's also important to remember that this, to address sustainability, might contain of a few business-specific challenges. It's not exactly the same thing in all businesses. So it could have to do with where you source, are your premises accessible, your supply chain, is there a risk for child labor, safety and security on your premises, and so on. So it is a question of doing your sustainability possible. And this is another way to define sustainability. All those areas that you need to focus on to be a good company, a good organization, in a good society. Now, that brings us to the four system conditions and the framework of the natural step. It's an NGO, 22-ish year old, actually starting in Sweden, but currently working in 11 countries across the world. And what they did was to focus on the challenges from a managerial point of view, so to speak. So many leaders today, and people in general, look at reality like this, as if it is a cylinder. A non-sustainable world is a world where we kind of destroy some parts of nature, there is some pollution, a few animals will die, but we have to cope with that if we want to lead a successful and qualitative life. Now if you think this is the truth, then you will have an environmental or sustainability policy saying that we will destroy as little as possible in our company. And that might sound okay, but if you look at reality, this is reality. We are more and more people on this earth bidding on what is left of fresh cropland, fresh forests, fresh oceans, non-polluted climate. And we all know what happens when more and more people bid on less and less resources. Prices will go up. So, to be part of the solution instead of adding to the problem, you need to start backcasting. In business, we have been forecasting for the last 200 years, maybe more. Forecasting, we all know what it is, saying that next year will be like this year, plus 3%. Okay, makes sense. But backcasting from principles is a totally different game. And you actually do it every day as an individual. It's very rare that you say, okay, I was born in Paris, now I'm living in Copenhagen, so I'm probably heading north. Instead you say, I would like to live in Oslo, because there's a good job that I know that I can get, there is a house that I can buy and I can afford, and my kids can go to school. So you plan from principles for success. And if you do the same within your business, something really interesting starts to happen. So if you put yourself here in a sustainable future, look at where you are today and start to systematically plan not to hit the wall in this funnel, but instead become part of the solution. Then you have a great advantage to your competitors that didn't understand that. Now, if you should plan for, or back cost from principle for success, you need the principles, right? So that is what the Natural Step did over 20 years ago. They started to focus on what do scientists agree on, rather than focus on what scientists disagree on, which the majority of media do. So, and this is a very busy slide, and I will divide it into four slides, but those are the principles for success. Now, and bear with me now, it's a bit theoretical, it's in English, which is not my native language, but it is important and it is a good guide. System condition at 1 tells us that we must, as an organization, individual, company, eliminate our contribution to systematic increases in concentrations of substances from the Earth's crust. What is this? This is oil, coal, nature gas, and rare minerals. Kind of easy. What does it mean for us in this business, if we're in the meeting business? Well, it's renewable transportation, it's energy efficiency, wood and paper rather than metal and plastic. But not only that, also the right metals, because the metals we need to phase out are the rare metals. It's almost impossible to poison the earth with aluminum, because the earth almost consists of aluminum. But when you start to dig up silver or copper or mercury, it's extremely poisonous. Okay? So, from the earth's crust, oil, coal, natural gas, rare metals. System condition 2. We must eliminate our contribution to the systematic increases, and once again, the systematic is getting worse and worse and worse, right? The systematic increases in concentrations of substances produced by society. What is this? Well, to put it short, it is persistent chemicals. Those chemicals that were invented like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and people were so proud of them because they were not biodegradable. They were strong, which is a problem. Because 30 years later, yes, you find them in women's breast milk, in the ice pears, and overall. So, what are the examples? Phase out the persistent chemicals, or even more importantly, phase in the biodegradable, eco-labeled chemicals. No PVC, no pesticides, no chlorine, but also a clear dosage instruction. Use wisely and efficiently the biodegradable chemicals that you need in your operation. System condition 3. We must eliminate our contribution to the systematic physical degradation of nature through overharvesting, introductions, and other forms of modification. What does that tell us? We cannot destroy our ecosystems because they are our lungs and our larders. Organic food, FSC-labeled wood, recycled paper, banned GMO, only use sustainable seafood, preserve nature and animals. It is about biodiversity and not systematically destroying biodiversity. And system condition 4, we must contribute as much as we can to the meeting of human needs in our society and worldwide. And what does that mean to our business? Just a few examples. Serving fair trade coffee, doing community programs, human rights policy, focus on supply chain, and so on. So if you stick to those four system conditions and use them wisely and start to use them, kind of train to use them in your personal life and in your commercial life, if you will, you start to slowly move towards a sustainable future and you gradually become part of the solution instead of adding to the problem. And the fun thing is, if your competitors didn't understand that, you will end up being lucky in business, and they will be unlucky in business, and they will be hit by costs and taxes and all that that we see. And you don't have to do those mistakes. And this is an example from a manufacturer of cleaning. What do you call it? Cleaning machines? Where you put clothes in and clean them? Washing machines. Thank you. Washing machines. They introduced 2 years ago in the Nordic market a washing machine with silver ions in the last rinse water. Silver, is that an abundant metal or is that a rare metal? Kind of rare. That's why we pay for it, right? So it's actually toxic. And they had to withdraw this machine after 3 weeks on the Nordic market. And I think the important learning from this is that the engineers who did this one and put a lot of efforts into producing this new machine, they didn't do it because they were stupid or mean. They did it because they didn't understand how it all hangs together. That's another strength. When you design your products and your services to be guided by the four system conditions. Okay, so there are a lot of things, and I don't ask you to read, I won't read them out to you, and I don't ask you to read them to you to read them through either. But there are a lot of things that you can do as an individual. And I think it's very important to stress and underline that sustainability is about doing. It's very much about practical changes in your daily life. Because it's so easy to say, it doesn't matter what I do, because they're opening a new coal plant in China every week. Well, my possibility to affect the number of coal plants in China is very, very limited. But my possibility to change my life, my family's life, and my organization's procedures is fairly big. And we are 6.5 billion people in this world, so if it starts from the individual base, it will eventually change the world. And with knowledge and with power, if you're a leader in your organization, and power and knowledge together makes you even more responsible to start this change. And we also have to kill the myths, because I can't think of any area, any topic where there are so many myths around. I mean, you still end up at the side of a person at a dinner saying that, well, I don't believe in climate change, or it's no idea to recycle because it all ends up on the same landfill. This is not true. Climate change is man-made. It's a fantastic amount of resources being recycled all over the world. We need to kill those myths. And it's very rare that you end up at the side of someone at a dinner table saying, well, I don't believe in bookkeeping, I think we shouldn't do that, because that is something that we all agreed on doing. But when it comes to sustainability, environmental and social sustainability, it's still okay to have those myths. So the conclusion is, you make the difference. Now, I promised to say a few words about eco-labels. So what is an eco-label? And what is an eco-label type 1? It's a credible eco-label that is third-party certified. Now, I come from a part of the world that we are happy to have a very, very strong and powerful eco-label in the Nordic Swan. In Europe, we have the EU Flower, which is a strong and credible eco-label, but it's not well-known, unfortunately. But the good thing is that both of those eco-labels do have criteria for hospitality, well, for accommodation, not yet, unfortunately, for meetings. And so if you compare it with environmental management systems, what they do is they say that if you want to use our brand, one, you need to pay for it, two, we are going to check you, three, you have to be amongst the 30% best on the market. That's the strength of an eco-label. They do have an holistic approach, and it's an immensely strong business-to-business tool, which I will come back to a little bit later. For you, those of you who attended Guy Bigwood's presentation, he touched on standards. And in the meetings industry, as we all know now, there are a lot of standards coming on board. And I'm using the slide of GMIC here, Green Meetings Industry Council, which I hope you know of. I happen to be at the board of GMIC, and I'm really impressed by that organization, born out of the States, and I must say, the leading organization when it comes to sustainability within the meetings industry. And at this slide, they do explain or talk about the British standard 8901, which was made for the Olympics in London 2012, which now are becoming an ISO 20121 standard. We have the American standard, APEX. So those are, I would say, those are almost the same, or will become almost the same. That one is existing, that will happen within a year, and that will happen within half a year, and it's the American version, so to speak. And those are all possible to use, or will be possible to use, to get a grip of if your meeting and event or event is at least moving towards sustainability. The fourth one is GRI, and I guess you are probably familiar with Global Reporting Initiative, which is a format for sustainability reporting, or turning your annual report into a sustainability report. And they do specific sector guidance sectors or whatever, for important industries, and meeting and events is one example of that. So, what I would like to use my last, how many minutes do we have left? 25. Excellent. Very good. 25 minutes, or 20 minutes, if we can have some discussions at the end, is to share with you two business cases. One is Scandic, which is a company I used to work with for ages, and the other one is Six Senses. Scandic, mid-market Nordic hotel chain, Six Senses, upmarket resort chain. Scandic is a leader in the Nordic. It started as a motel company in 1963. Today it's close to 150 leased, managed, franchised hotels in operation and under development in 10 countries. And a few examples here are coming hotels for Scandic: downtown Stockholm, downtown Hamburg, downtown Berlin. So it's an efficient mid-market hotel chain. An efficient mid-market hotel chain that in 1991 was almost broke. And the owners brought in a new management, and that new management started to build a strong brand through shared values. And a value that was easy to share in the early 90s in the Nordic arena was environmental, and to introduce an environmental program. So that's how it all started. I would say, even though I'm a bit biased perhaps, that Scandic is one of the three, four, five examples globally on sustainability programs within the hotel business. The vision, and this has only been the vision for 2 years, so it kind of took Scandic 15 years to get sustainability into the vision, is creating value by being the place and inspiration for conscious people in a better world. And this is a few pieces in the Scandic sustainability puzzle, and I would like to share some of those with you as examples of what is actually happening on a practical level within that hotel chain. Kicking off with social or ethical sustainability, which Scandic started to focus on in the late 90s, after at that time 8 years with focus on environmental sustainability. And they saw, like so many other companies, the need to broaden the environmental program to also social program and take a more holistic approach. So what they did was to introduce it through dialogue meetings, something called Scandic in Society. And I just want to mention a few words around dialogue meetings, because this is one of the reasons behind the success of what Scandic has been doing. A dialogue meeting is a half-day seminar for all team members in the company. In Scandic's case, it's 6,500 people, where they get the knowledge, discuss and create the program, and the management of the hotel consolidate the program, and the management in the company make it a corporate program. So it comes from down under rather than top down. And this is extremely powerful, and it builds a very, very strong internal company culture. And I guess maybe in Europe it's more or less a given today. But I was in an international environmental conference 10 years ago and met with an environmental manager from a huge international company, and we were going to share the best practices. And I started to explain the dialogue meetings principle to him, and he said, "All team members? Even down to the plant managers?" I said, "Okay, well, all team members." So this is a cultural difference that is very important. The dishwasher, all the guys and girls in the company need to understand and be part of the creation of the program. That has happened 8 times over with Scandic. But that is not enough. The Scandic in Society program, after the dialogue process, ended up in 700 activities going on in local communities with a lot of examples where you offered free coffee to parents that were walking around the city in the evenings to protect the youngsters, or where a general manager was a mentor to a youngster which was perhaps starting to get into criminality, and where you cook food to the homeless, and 697 other examples. Now, to be able to communicate this and market this, Scandic also saw the need of a corporate activity, or actually more corporate activities. One example of that is this. This is a mangrove swamp. This is another mangrove swamp. This is a mangrove swamp after 2 years when you've been breeding giant prawns, scampi in it. And after 2 years, you move on and you continue the production, and the mangrove swamp looks like this. Scandic didn't know this, didn't have a clue about this 5 years ago, when the Nordic Associations of Nature Protection told us that and a few other really scaring facts around big prawns, giant prawns, big shrimps, whatever you call them, scampi, you know, the good, nice shrimps, which is really, really, really scary. So it was kind of easy for Scandi to say, let's phase out scampi from the menus. And this wasn't the most frequent item you found in the menus. I think it was around 100 tons or something per year, but that's in a huge company. So if they would have done only that, it would have been like a cheap marketing activity. But when they did it, after 12 years of natural step towards a more sustainable world, it was understood and perceived as an important way to address an icon of unsustainable fishery. Another example is accessibility. This guy, Magnus Berglund, and his dog Ada. Ada to the left, Magnus to the right. He used to work at Scandic as a chef. He got ill in a neurological disease and came back after 4 years and said, I have an idea. I cannot work as a chef anymore because of my body, but I want to start Scandic's accessibility or handicap program, as we said in those days. Today, 6 years later, Scandic is perceived as the leader within accessibility in the hotel industry. And it is a profit maker. There are over 1 million people with some kind of disability in Sweden alone, as this example tells us, in a population of 10 million people. There are 50 million potential guests in Europe with some kind of disability. Guests that this business hasn't catered enough for until today, I think. The first year in 2003, Scandi got 15,000 new room nights, incremental business, because of this program. So it definitely pays off both on a personal satisfaction level, but also on a profit level. So what they did was to introduce a standard which is very much focused on soft things, behavioral things, rather than only the hardware changes. Safety and security, is that part of sustainability? Definitely is. Is safety and security important to the hotel business? Yes, it is. Is it always addressed in the right way? Maybe not. In some part, well, at least from a Nordic perspective, which I'm talking about now, if you go to congress and conferences, there's a little bit too much focus on terrorism and things like that, which is very rare, thank God, so far in the Nordic countries. The biggest threat we have is, of course, fire in the hotel business. Fire, 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 fire. And to that end, Scandic has a broad program based on training and education of the team members once again. And Scandic has been using e-learning for the last 12 years now. So during your first month of employment in Scandic, you go through 4 e-learnings of 1 hour each with a test at the end. 1 safety and security, 1 in environmental sustainability, 1 in the tradition heritage of the company, and 1 in sales and service. And they are built up in the same way as e-learnings normally are. So maybe this is the most spectacular example where you are faced with an armed robbery, and then you get the illustration and you get the question, what are you doing now? And if you, as a new team member, suggest that you would report to the general manager in this case, obviously you will get the feedback, maybe that's not the best thing to do. You get your second chance and you click on the cash drawer and you get the feedback, yes, money can be replaced, life can be not. And in the same way, you are guided through different situations, whether it's environmental sustainability, social sustainability, safety and security, or whatever it is, which is a fast way to get up the average level of education and understanding across the team member state. Health. In 2003, Scandic decided to try to become the healthiest company in the travel industry, seeing health as an important part of sustainability. So what did they do? They focus on the healthy path, not telling the guests that they should be healthy, but offering the guests a healthy option, whether it was on the menus, when you wanted to train, or in other parts of your stay at a Scandic. And this was also a program that happened behind the stage for all the team members. And we're moving on fast now. And coming into environmental sustainability, which is actually where it all started in 1994, where Scandic said that instead of just fulfilling legislation, why not try to become part of the solution and actually contribute to a sustainable society? And that has been the sustainability policy since. And if I should mention two success factors, this is one, a leadership that is dedicated. And not only the CEO, this happened to be Frank Fiskus, the current CEO, but all the leaders in the company need to understand sustainability and point in a sustainable direction. If you don't have that, my recommendation is to skip the program, do something else with the money. But if you have a leadership that understands sustainability and combine it with training of all team members, then something really fascinating starts to happen, because people want to survive. They even want their kids to survive. So the reason why we make so many stupid and unsustainable decisions is not that we are mean or stupid. It's just that we do not understand how it all hangs together. So those two success factors in combination leads to a lot of practical things. And I will just slide through those slides. And it's a focus on waste. And I said it before, it's about an upstream and downstream approach. It's about measuring. It's about doing small practical changes. This is an old figure saying that Scandic has not used 500 million of single-packed items. I think it's up to 700 million today. No soups, shampoos, jam, butter, whatever, it's gone. And the good thing is that the guest perception is more positive today. They can give the guest a more qualitative experience, but without the single-packed items, which is so typical for our industry. And I don't think it's the guest that asked for it. It's just us being extremely conservative in this business. Organic food, and it's been mentioned many times this day. Scandic introduced in 2001 organic breakfast because there are criteria. There is a type 1 eco-label called Krav in Sweden and similar ones in the other Nordic countries. So what they did was to offer at the breakfast buffet, which is included in the room price, 16 of the products organically made, which is what the criteria say. It's actually asked only for 12 items. And you can say that 16 out of 100, which is what you find at a normal breakfast buffet in Scandinavia, is almost nothing. But you can almost say, like the Krav guys themselves says, it's much more than zero. And if you serve 4.2 million breakfasts a year, which Scandic do in Sweden alone, it actually adds up to quite big numbers. Construction. If you do something wrong when it comes to sustainability, for example, if you buy single-packed items suddenly after 3 years, it's easy to fix. You can just send it back. But if you do something wrong when you refurbish a hotel room or build a new hotel, it will stay for 15 or 20 or maybe even 100 years. That's why it's important to have a good standard for construction. What Scandic did was in 1995, they developed the Eco Room, which is a hotel room looked at from a life cycle perspective. What kind of systems, products, solutions do you put into that room? And what amount of resources do those systems, products use during the room's lifetime? And how can it all be intelligently recycled when it's done its duty? And that is now more today, it's a standard called Cerex, which is not only used for the room, but for the whole of a new hotel, when a new hotel is built or refurbished. 3 years ago, if I remember right, Scandic suddenly became aware of the fact that everybody talked about green meetings and said, well, okay, what do we do within the field of green meetings? And they come up with a list of all the things that is happening at the Scandic today. And when you add that together, they say that this is actually not a sustainable meeting, but it is a meeting that definitely is on the journey towards sustainability. So they started to talk about sustainable meetings with this long list of different small actions that together form a sustainable meeting. Last year, Scandic, like many others, but Scandic was one of the first, banned the bottled water. Now, one should recognize that the majority of the hotels are located in Nordic countries where the tap water is of extremely high quality. But, as I said before, Scandic is present in 10 countries, and the system that they launched is used and can be used everywhere, and they filter, chill, carbonate, and serve tap water and sell to the guests. And this obviously gives a huge difference to, for example, the carbon dioxide emissions comes out of the water production. It's almost impossible to talk about environmental sustainability or sustainability at all without mentioning fossil carbon dioxide emissions, and I've been touching it already, and Scandic already in 1996 started to measure the fossil carbon dioxide emissions. Now, how come? Well, actually, they didn't. They started to measure the energy used. And 3-4 years later, they asked the hotels, on a hotel level, to report the sourcing of this energy. How was that energy made? How was it cooked? Which made it possible to start to calculate actual values of fossil carbon dioxide emissions in kilos per guest night, starting with around 4 kilos, going down 2006 to 3.1 kilo, to 2007, 2.8 kilos of fossil carbon dioxide per guest night, the balloon this size, approximately. And this is the annual results for 2009, released a week ago, and that was the third year they publish as a part, as you can see, of the traditional financial KPIs, also the sustainability or environmental sustainability KPIs. And I'm happy to realize that the fossil carbon dioxide is now down to 2.6 kilos per guest night. Actual values, not estimations. This also enabled Scandic to set a rather brave commitment, saying that by 2011 they should halve the fossil carbon dioxide emissions from the direct operations, i.e. how they heat up, cool down, light up the hotels, and how they drive their own cars. And by 2025, to not emit any fossil carbon dioxide at all. You could argue that this is a brave commitment, or maybe even a stupid commitment, but I think it is a double commitment. The 100% is not possible to do alone. You need to do it in cooperation with the local communities, of course. But I think, given that there still are like 10, 15 years left, this will happen. I already mentioned eco-labeling, and I just want to say that the third bullet point here, yes, it is a fantastically strong business-to-business tool. Scandic today, if not every week, every second week, get 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 new room nights from corporate clients and from governmental clients just because of the eco-labeling. So, just for them to brag, a lot of effects, a lot of results when you look at it over a long period of time. Of course, a lot of awards, which creates pride. And if you would like to know some more about the Scandic experience and the Scandic example, please visit scandichotels.com/betterworld, which is an interactive site which in a much more fun way than I've been able to do can explain and give you examples of what has happened during the last 10, 12 years. Which takes us to the last business case. 6 minutes for six senses. Well, couldn't be better. A totally different business. A business that I don't know at all as well as I know Scandic, but I'm really impressed by what they are doing. Running their business in a totally different part of the world, in a remote part of the world, the majority of those pictures are from the Maldives. I guess you probably know... Six senses. Which is, it's primarily a resort hotel chain, very, very much upscale. And talking about sustainable construction, local materials, with a focus on adding no persistent chemicals in the construction, natural ventilation, natural light, deep seawater cooling. Obviously, their challenge is not heating the hotels like in Scandic's case. It's obviously cooling the hotels. And we all know the extreme problem with air conditions that we see all over the world with too high energy usage and a lot of really scary chemicals in them. Here they just use the fact that at the deep of the ocean, the temperature is around 5-6 degrees to chill and to cool down the villas. rainwater harvesting, part of their water management. Oops. Water, not any bottled water served at the Maldives. That's kind of impressive. The first time I was at the Maldives, I've only been there twice, and for work. The first time I was there, when I went off the plane into the seaplane, the first thing I got was an Evian, a chilled Evian water from the French Alps, which probably flew with the same plane as I did. Doesn't make sense. This is almost the same system that Scandic uses, and it's local water, filtered, carbonated, chilled, and even with taste, in this case, lemon. Really impressive to do that out in the middle of nowhere. Other parts of the water management, which is the water treatment plant, composting, recycling, reusing of the resources. No single packed item. And very often within Scandic, when we talked about, we phased out the single pack, yeah, you can do that, you're in the mid-market. But think of the upscale hotels. They need all those small soups. Is this upscale? I would say so. This is the place where the Madonnas of this world live. And of course, they have strong brands in those containers. But it's actually containers that they do refill. Works perfectly. This is replanting of a mangrove swamp, done by team members, together with team members. Organic gardening, responsible purchasing, local purchasing. Training of local kids, this once again the Maldives. Educating them in recycling, composting. So, that was a very short 6-sentence example because of respect for the time schedule. My conclusion is that sustainability is engaging, fun, profitable, extremely profitable. It builds your brand, and as we all know, it's a prerequisite for our survival. So, what I would like you to do is to use a minute or two. We will also have, if you have any question, I'd love to have a few words around that. But please don't forget to do the feedback survey. I've been told to say this, and I like those small spot me things. And how you do it says there, but I think you probably already know it. So by that, I'm kind of done. I deeply believe that it's smarter to be part of the solution than adding to the problems. And a few of the things I've been saying here, I also wrote in a book called Sustainability in Practice, and you'll find my contact details on my website or at LinkedIn. So that was kind of my presentation. Now, open for questions. Should we turn up the light, perhaps? Thank you. So, any thoughts, questions? It's late in the afternoon now, and the drinks are waiting. I will let you loose. But... Yes, sir. Let's see. I almost failed.
Hello?
Yep. Thank you. We are recording, so I ask you to use the microphone.
I just wanted to ask, you said you are in the board of GMIC?
Yes.
Is that a global, so to say, movement, perhaps, in a case, because it definitely is growing and it is developing. So
yes.
If you could tell us more about that.
Thank you for that question. It was almost as if I planned that question, but I didn't. Yes, it is moving internationally. It's going globally now. As I said, it's born out of the States, and I think that's so encouraging, because especially up in the Nordic, I don't know about the rest of you in Europe, we think that we're ahead of the Americans and they don't get it at all. That's why it's so fun that Green Meetings Industry Council actually started out of North America. And it is spreading globally. And now the question is, right, Pedro, where will we see the first European chapter? Will it be in the Iberian Island? Will it be in, I think you're from Slovenia, aren't you? It is a possibility. Slovenia has said that there is an interest. Will it be in Sweden? Will it be in Denmark? We heard about Copenhagen. So there is definitely not only an intention to going global, we are going global. And I think if you go into greenmeetings.info, I'm sorry I don't have the web address here on the slide, but greenmeetings.info, there's a lot of valuable content already at that site, which actually helps you when you want to dive deeper into what a green meeting, or if you prefer, a sustainable meeting is. Any other thoughts, questions? remarks? Yes, sir. Please use the microphone.
Can you tell us a bit? Hi. Can you tell us a bit more about the book, your sustainability and practice book?
The book.
Yes.
Well, I don't think I'm allowed to do that. Well, no marketing was there. Now, what I tried to do was to reduce this down to an easy, understandable, fast guide for leaders. So it's kind of a thin book, like 100 plus pages. And the reason is not that I ran out of words. The reason is that I wanted to boil it down to something where you actually could start. And then the chapters are divided. The book is divided into the chapters covering the areas that I had in the sustainability puzzle that you saw. So it's both accessibility, usability, safety and security, environmental sustainability, and so on. So, yeah, you find it at www.sleepwell.nu. Thank you for that question. Any other thoughts? Okay, then I let you loose. See you in Malaga downtown tonight at the Tapas Bars or the Liceo, wherever it is. Liceo. And are we doing the Tapas tour before, and we should be at the Liceo 9:30?
Yes.
I said it right. Okay. Thank you a lot, Sirianne. Cheers.